good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Cody Cook, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. A Kadagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade, which means distant thunder in the Ho-Chunk language. My colonized name is Robert Pilot, and we discuss national and local and Twin City news, Native news and events. And as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Hey, I just want to jump in. We had a show last week, and I want to make this a special show tonight. And we're going to have JoJo Brooks Shiflet on again, and we're going to get deep and talk deep into what happened to Leonard Peltier, where he's at now, and we're going to probably resume where we were when we left off. We were only on for a segment, and I thought it was important to bring JoJo back. And she has a huge resume here, and I'm just going to read it before we get it on here, get her on here. And that's she worked as a staff counsel for Senator John McCain and Senator Ben Nighthorse Campbell on the Senate Committee of Indian Affairs, was attorney for American Indian Movement co-founder Dennis Banks, and wrote the book we'll talk about a little bit more, Lumbi Gershom, and I'll get the right pronunciation of that, which is on the selected reading list in the Indigenous Books in North Carolina Public Schools. Now, JoJo is working pro bono with many others to obtain clemency for the Native American political prisoner, Leonard Peltier. Welcome, JoJo. Thank you so much for spending some time with us again.
Thank you for having me, Robert. How are you doing today?
We're doing pretty good. Hey, I want you to just start where you ended last time, because we only had you on for 10 minutes and you were getting into some really, really important information. If you want to just start where you left off, maybe just back up a little bit so our new listeners can understand what you were talking about. Could you do that for me, please?
Sure. I'm going to try to do that the best I can, Robert. What we were discussing last time was really, I guess, it's the secret subdivision of the FBI. It really was an illegal operation that was within the FBI in the 1970s. It was started, however, during the Cold War with Russia. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of youngsters out there, Robert. I'm 57. I don't know how old you are, but I think you're in my age group.
Yep, a little older.
We remember. Oh, okay. But we remember fearing the Soviet Union. And I don't know about you, but I grew up very aware that there was some kind of button they could push or we could push and blow each other up.
Right.
It was this fear that drove a program within the FBI called COINTELPRO. Counterintelligence program. I think probably it's still operated today, but much more discreet. And they do some unsavory things. But back in the 70s, let's go to Leonard. Back in the 70s, COINTELPRO was going strong then, from the 60s, actually. They had followed Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, the underground weather. Do you remember the weather underground, the underground weather?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Well, they were the ones that kind of revealed COINTELPRO. But anyway, so what did they do to Leonard and Ames? Mm-hmm. Well, I was there. I was 8 years old. 1972, November, about a week or two before Nixon was reelected to his second term. We had the Trail of Broken Treaties. Remember that, Robert?
You sure do.
Yeah. AIM, under the leadership of Mr. Russell Dean and Mr. Dennis J. Banks, led a caravan across the country. Actually, it was three separate caravans.
Mm-hmm.
And they picked up tribes and Indians along the way. And one of those Indians happened to be my granddaddy, Henry Brooks, Hatteras-Tuscarora. They had visited us before. That's why I think I'd probably have a fierce loyalty to all things AIM, because my tribe had been terminated. And we weren't very strong politically. We were disenfranchised. There was nothing to gain from helping us. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But Mr. Dennis Banks flew in here and met with us and showed my little tribe of about probably 150 people how to protest, how to be heard, how to use that voice, your political voice. He camped out on the school department or the school board,
mm-hmm.
the Robeson County School Board. Yeah. Because at the time, integration was coming into vogue. The Supreme Court had mandated it years before, but in the South, it had never been implemented. But being Native American, my grandfather and many others actually in the county who were Native American, they didn't want integration.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that they were anti-white or anti-black. Not at all. Our tribe actually hid, but we're notorious for it, hiding runaway slaves mm-hmm. during the Civil War and afterwards. Because we were targeted as Native Americans. We were targeted in the South, much like our African-American brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a racist sentiment. It was more an Indian right to exist, to be sovereign. We wanted to continue to have Indian-only schools. So anyway, that is what brought us with AIM. So we got on the caravan. My grandfather thought it was terribly important that I be there.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Alexandria with my parents. They took me over there and I spent the week. And what turned into, it was supposed to be an educational, honestly, I was eight. I was just glad I was getting to miss school. And but my parents thought they were going to come back and get me. They were going to let me stay one night with him. But something happened. A little disagreement turned into a big disagreement. And AIM, or I guess I should say the tribes under the leadership of AIM, we occupied by force the Bureau of Indian Affairs building in Washington, D.C. in 1972,
mm-hmm.
turned into a seven-day standoff. There was machine gun. There was every kind of law enforcement agency you could probably imagine, because we were in the heart of D.C., not far in walking distance from the White House.
Mm-hmm.
We were a great embarrassment, of course, to the Nixon administration. I have memos that say, of course, we are all outraged by these Indians and their behavior. So that's what put us on the radar of COINTELPRO.
Mm-hmm.
A guy by the name of John Dean, he was involved in the Watergate scandal. He was the White House counsel. He was special counsel to Nixon, the president. He was very upset. He sends a letter to the FBI after we left, after the 7 days was up. How did this happen? Who are these people? Well, AIM, I don't think they meant to at all. Well, I was there. It wasn't a planned occupation.
Mm-hmm.
We were there to meet with the Nixon administration's executive level representative who handled Indian affairs. We were even promised a meeting with the vice president, Spiro Agnew, back then.
Wow.
We came to town. Not only. They kind of torpedoed us. We were supposed to stay at a church and a YMCA.
Mm-hmm.
And, I can't remember the name of the arena, some arena. But anyway, all the reservations were canceled. All the rooms were booked. We ended up in the attics and the basements of old churches.
Mm-hmm.
There were, I mean, it's documented. There were rats in some of the spaces we were staying in. They put my grandfather, I wasn't there that first night. They put my grandfather in the, he was an elder. He was one of the older Indians there. And they put him in the YMCA. So he didn't get that terribly bad experience. But the younger families did, especially the young Indian men. And they were humiliated. You know, they'd traveled all this way.
Mm-hmm.
They had produced an excellent document. It was I think it was 20-point, they called it their 20-point treaty or their 20-point.
Right.
I can't remember what it was, but like a manifesto kind of thing.
Yep, that's what it was.
But basically, what they were asking. Go ahead.
Jojo, let's take a quick break here and get back to this. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we're talking about Leonard Peltier and what led up to that. And we'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
When we heal from our traumas,
when we face our fears,
let go of our addictions,
when we relearn our values,
when we live our teachings,
respecting our elders,
cherishing and honoring our children,
when we honor and take care of our spirit,
there will be no room left for sexual violence.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Life is a journey, and the Doherty Family College will help you get where you want to go. Located downtown Minneapolis, this affordable two-year college provides free textbooks, a laptop, meals, career coaches, one-on-one mentorship, and a Metro Transit Pass, making DFC the perfect pathway to a bachelor's degree. Turn your dreams into reality. Connect with a counselor today at dfc.stthomas.edu.
Back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We're here with Jojo Brooks Shiflett, and we're talking about Leonard Peltier, but also we're really giving some background and information about what led up to the incident in Ogallala, which is called in the Robert Redford documentary about it. But we want to talk a little bit more prior to that. So that, take it again, Jojo. Thanks again.
Sure, Robert. Okay, let's bring them up to speed a little bit. We were talking about how did AIM, American Indian Movement, and specifically, we'll get to this, Leonard Peltier, a Native American political prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
How did Leonard become a target of the illegal and unsavory acts of COINTELPRO, Counterintelligence Program? I think kind of the name implies, you know, that it used some things that we would call un-American. So anyway, what brought us into that radar, AIM, was the takeover or the occupation of the Bureau of Indian Affairs building in November of 1972, right before Nixon's election.
So we were talking about what happened. Basically, after many promises and agreements and planning, AIM had planned this for a year. They came up with, as we were saying, Robert, a 20-point proposal, which outlined, basically, what it said is we want you to honor the treaty. We want more self-determination. We want Indians to have freedom of religion, because we did not have it back then.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until AIM took over the BIA and made a statement in Washington that the Indian, I'm not going to say this right, I know, but it's the Freedom of Religion Act for Indians, the Indian Freedom of Religion Act.
Yep,
that's so it. Anyway, what ends up happening was after a seven-day standoff between federal armed law enforcement of the National Guard, you name it, they were there. So when that happens, the counsel, John Dean, to the president, writes then associate director for the FBI, guy by the name, this is interesting, W. Mark Felt.
Hmm.
He was then the associate acting director of the FBI. Edgar Hoover had recently passed, who, as we know, was like the godfather, the architect of the FBI.
Right.
And COINTELPRO. So he sends a memo. Says, we want to know who these people are, these Indians. And we want to know their names. We want to know if they're dangerous. Who are they to come into Washington, take over a building, and not be afraid of helicopters? And, you know, we were unarmed. I was mm-hmm. there. I was 8 years old, as I said before. But if we have any new listeners, I was there with my granddaddy.
Mm-hmm.
And Russell Means and Dennis Banks were leading us. So that memo, in response, Mark Felt, W. Mark Felt, puts us into COINTELPRO. He promises the president, you know, I guess he wanted to make a statement,
mm-hmm.
wanted to make himself known a little bit. So he says, that's not going to happen again, sir. You're going to know everything about these people. You just give me the names and I'll make sure you know. Well, first names he listed, Clyde Belcourt, Vernon Belcourt, Russell Means, Dennis Banks. They hadn't got around to Leonard yet.
Mm-hmm.
They put them under constant surveillance, and this is 1972 in December. Well, then Wounded Knee happened. The whole time Wounded Knee was going on, we were in COINTELPRO, which means we had infiltrators.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But see, I was going to say, this was a byproduct that I don't think Mr. Dennis Banks or Mr. Russell Means had intended. You know, I don't even think they probably were aware, as most Americans were not aware, of this program called COINTELPRO. I mean, I think we all knew, or we all imagined from the movies and things, that powerful government agencies have powerful means and secret things that they can do to people. But we always think that the former Soviet Union or China or Korea or something does those kind of things. We're in the land of the free.
Mm.
I think Mr. Banks, we spoke about it one time. He said he didn't know what was going on. He said that there was times he was so paranoid at Wounded Knee that he thought maybe his nerves were going.
Mm.
Things he would say, they would know. That's when they started realizing the FBI, it's not like we thought it was. It's not just there to defend the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and to protect us.
Mm.
I think maybe they thought they were the FBI. That was their whole reasoning. That was the justification they used for COINTELPRO, was the greater good, the national security.
Mm.
But if you read their minutes, they made up things about AIM to keep it going. We had bunkers, they said, army bunkers. We had loads of weapons, automatic rifles. we trained our young men to be war warriors, to take over the government. That's what we wanted to do.
Right.
And here's what they were really afraid of. They were afraid that if we did, if any Indian tribe achieved sovereignty on a certain level, I guess, that China or the Soviet Union would come in and infiltrate us.
Wow.
A little Indian tribe. Yeah. And that would give them some kind of, I guess, you know, give them the chance to become a cell. You know, what? Remember we used to call them the Arab cells, the terrorist cells?
Right.
Reservations would become breeding grounds for terrorist cells. This is scary stuff, isn't it? But they believed it, I think. Either they believed it, if you read their minutes, or they had quite an imagination. I don't know. but you know, I was, my grandfather was active in AIM, and they were a poor group. You know, most of the funding they actually got was government grants that were approved. But anyway, moving along, Leonard, one of their strategies, COINTELPRO, was to target the leaders and keep them tied up in court. Because if you tie up leaders, they said, the group, the organization, they will spend all their money and all their time and all their energy not against the United States, but trying to free their leaders. And it's pretty true. It's what happened.
Right.
So after Wounded Knee, and then that went out, that the leaders of Wounded Knee, and not just the leaders, they even said, actually they said anybody in Wounded Knee who was part of the occupation that went in as a supporter, they were to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. That if this did not happen, if they even used the phrase, we must make examples of the insurgents. They called them insurgents.
Hmm.
And so one by one, I would say probably 90% of those participating at Wounded Knee were prosecuted or at least investigated. But as we well know, Mr. Means and Mr. Banks, they faced a lengthy trial.
Right.
And then they had charges, and also from Custer. Remember, there was a riot at Custer.
Right.
How many government, I mean, think about the government energy and time and money that went in to following them and really plotting their, what would you call it? Their execution by prosecution, their political execution by legal prosecution.
Wow.
Here's the thing. It wasn't just them. Then Russ Means was in another court case with a guy, I think it was Richard Mullins. That was going on. That they finally got around to that court case around the same time as the Leonard Peltier court case got going. But there was all these court cases going. They were involved in like two and three at the same time. It was never ending. And they eventually broke down AIM. They really did. I mean, I would say they broke the spirit of AIM, because AIM, unlike the propaganda that was perpetrated and nourished by the government, they were not a militant organization. That was not their goal.
Right.
Our goal was to be a spiritual reconnection. We were all about reconnecting to our roots. The men, because it was men who founded it. I hear those ladies. I do know there was prominent AIM ladies, Madonna Thunderhawk and Phyllis Young, Miss Bernie Nichols Lafferty, Anna Mae Quash. These women, strong American Indian women and from Canada. Miss Aquash was from Canada, I think. They played a significant role. significant.
Let's leave it at that and come back for another segment. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we're talking in, up to the lead-in of how Leonard Peltier was arrested and is the longest-standing political prisoner in the United States. We'll be right back after this short break.
Aho, relatives. My name is George McCauley, Omaha Nation. I'm a citizen of the Omaha Nation in Nebraska. As we head into wintertime, many of us will be back together indoors. It's important to make sure you receive your COVID booster shot. Older Americans are more at risk for complications for COVID-19. All three COVID vaccine boosters have been approved. Find a vaccine site by calling 651-304-9986 or go to vaccineconnector.mn.gov.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Children's Minnesota raises up children's health by raising the standards, hands, voices, the bar, the stakes, the questions, and the curtain on raising kids' health to the highest priority. With the most pediatric experts in the Upper Midwest, we're setting the stage because kids need us, all of us. So let's raise them up so every kid can reach their best health. Children's Minnesota, the kid experts.
Navigating COVID while protecting yourself can be difficult. Fortunately, there's a hotline you can call with any questions. The Department of Indian Work St. Paul partnered with the Minnesota Department of Health to open the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline. They provide information on vaccines, booster shots, and testing sites. Right now, booster shots are available to anyone over the age of 18 for those who are eligible. The Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline can also help with housing, food, medical, and educational support. If you or someone you know has questions about COVID-19, vaccinations, booster shots, or testing, please call 651-304-9986. Again, the number is 651-304-9986. The Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline is open for calls Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline at 651-304-9986.
Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We're here really getting into the history of what's happened to our people. We have the longest serving political prisoner in the history of the United States, Leonard Peltier, and we're leading up to that here. And we have JoJo Brooks Shiflett, who is a lawyer who works with on pro bono with helping to try and free Leonard Peltier. And we're talking a little backstory. Now we're going to get into with JoJo what happened to Leonard and what we can do. So welcome back, JoJo.
Hey there, Robert. Yes. I guess I'm a writer at heart. I tell stories, and I better get to the heart of the story before we run out of time. We were talking about the background of AIM, how it came under COINTELPRO. So I guess it's time to get to how it got to Leonard.
Right.
How did Leonard Peltier, who is now 77 years old, pulled over 46 years in a maximum security prison? Leonard is Chippewa of Turtle Mountain Reservation.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got heart disease, diabetes. But the most, I guess, the saddest thing about Leonard is he's innocent. I believe it. I believe it. The more I read, and it's not because somebody told me as a child. It's not because of all the bumper stickers I read that said free Leonard Peltier.
Mm-hmm.
That influenced me. But I started really carrying a burden for Leonard. When I got sick with COVID-19 and I was stuck in bed, Been in bed now, not all the time, but I'd say about 75% of the time. Mm. I'm a long hauler, they call me. So I started reading. I wanted to still be productive. My body might not work so well, but my brain still does.
Mm-hmm.
And I downloaded a lot of his court transcripts and declassified material. Robert, I've been reading now for almost a year. A little bit every day, a little bit every 2 days, whatever. I still haven't got through it.
Wow.
Yeah, there's just the volume of information. But you know what? Within the first week, I believed he was innocent. Even if he wasn't, okay, I thought this. I still don't know. I'm so early into the case. I don't know if he did it, but I know enough to know he shouldn't have been put in jail, and I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
Starts out with a memo. See, the FBI, there's a teletype that was 3 weeks, okay, after the shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Leonard, just to do some background here, he was arrested and convicted, wrongly convicted, for shooting and killing two FBI agents on June 26, 1975, on the Pine Ridge Reservation, called The Shootout at Oglala.
Right.
Robert Redford did an excellent documentary you can download from YouTube if you are interested to any of your listeners. It's an excellent documentary. So if you look at that, well, the teletype. Let's get back to the teletype.
Mm-hmm.
So 3 weeks after the shootout occurred, the teletype reads, one sentence of it, I remember it now. It says, it's giving the FBI drafted the memo to their agents to investigate, of course, the death of their two agents who were killed at the shootout. If you read down that list of what they tell their agents to do, number five on that list, develop information to lock Peltier and Black Horse into this case.
Wow.
That's a declassified document. That document was never shown to a jury. It was never shown to the defense attorney. Leonard was targeted from the get-go. And even before this, Leonard started moving up through AIM, especially after Wounded Knee, especially after folks like Belcourt, the Belcourt brothers, and Mr. Means, you know, they're tied up in court.
Right.
So people, or I should say gentlemen and there were ladies, they moved up through the ranks, I guess. It was unofficial ranks. There was no ranking in AIM. It was not that kind of a group.
Right.
It was a movement. There was no membership cards or anything. You know, it really was like a movement. It was energy. And anyway, I mean, my grandfather would tell you he was a member of AIM, but he did not have a card. He did not pay dues.
Right.
What he did do was march. Then he spoke out whenever he could, about Indians and the rights that we should have.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, what ends up happening after the shootout and the teletype, three of them, they charged three. Oh, and please forgive me. I forgot to mention young man, a Native American was shot and killed also in that shootout.
Right.
Death was never investigated, not even investigated.
Mm-hmm.
So they did end up arresting three gentlemen. Robidoux,
right.
Dean Butler. It was Dean Butler, Robidoux, and can you help me with the third? I can't remember it right now.
I thought...
go ahead.
I thought Leonard was the third, but I could be wrong.
No. He was the third to be prosecuted, but there was four arrested. The third guy I'm speaking of, they dropped the charges against him. He didn't even make it to court. See, these were the evidence was so manufactured, so bad, that one of the guys, think about this, the FBI investigated and actually got the prosecution to bring charges they dropped them even before trial. It got dismissed. His case got dismissed. That's how weak these things were. If you got, because here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you got it in front of a jury or a judge with common sense who was fair and not biased, most of these cases they had used to harass AIM leaders for years, I would say the majority was dropped. Probably 75-80% of these cases, the charges were always dropped. But they kept bringing them under COINTELPRO. That was, you know, what they did. So anyway, what happens to Leonard? Leonard went to Canada. I think if Leonard knew, Leonard had been targeted before. There was a killing, I think it was in Milwaukee, but I'm not sure. That an officer, off-duty police officer, pressed charges against Leonard Peltier, said he tried to murder him. And they charged him with intent to murder. It was preposterous. But Leonard had a warrant, an outstanding warrant against him for that when he was in the shootout. Leonard didn't stand trial for that, for those charges, until after his trial there at for the shootout at Oglala. They were dismissed.
Hmm.
The girlfriend of the officer came forward, and she said that she testified that the policeman was then her boyfriend, and he said, "I'm going to move up." Because I'm going, and these were his words that she testified to, going to catch a big fish for the feds. And he fingered Leonard. So I think that probably affected Leonard Peltier. Mm-hmm. Because after the shootout, he ran to Canada. So he's in Canada. The Canadian authorities knew he was there. They told the the FBI, really, the American authorities, we're not sending him back to be tried in a court that won't offer him justice.
Exactly.
And we're not going to send him back if you're going to give him the death penalty. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, our treaty, we have an extradition treaty with many countries, including Canada. Under that extradition treaty, you have to prove certain facts to get somebody extradited. One of those facts you have to prove is pretty much that you have an eyewitness, that you have real strong probable cause that the person you want to extradite did it. So, FBI doesn't produce one, doesn't produce two. They come up with three affidavits. What's an affidavit?
Mm-hmm.
David's testimony, legal testimony sworn to under penalty of perjury that you are telling the truth about what happened. They found a young Native lady in the Pine Ridge Reservation, Myrtle Poorbear.
Mm-hmm.
She was kind of a tragic figure in all this.
Right.
She was mentally unstable. Myrtle had some serious emotional issues. I think she was bullied into it. There's footage of her, video footage, later recanting everything and stating that the FBI had threatened her to take her only child. And some more grotesque things they did. Anime Aquash was found deceased. Mm-hmm. And they, according to the record, they scared her by showing her pictures of Miss Aquash's body and her hands
right. That
were severed from her body.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking grisly things that should not happen in the land of the free.
That's right. She later reported mm-hmm. that she was coerced by the FBI to make that claim. And also, the judge barred her testimony because of her mental incompetence, too. So, hey, we got less than 30 seconds. That's a segue into the last segment of this compelling story. I'm here with JoJo Brooks Shiflett, who's author, who's a lawyer, and also working on pro bono with the Free Leonard Peltier groups. And so we're really excited to get back to your JoJo. Hold on. We'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a five-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me one. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Unwanted sexting or photos, inappropriate jokes, even tickling or wrestling can feel like a violation. Catcalling, cornering, or groping, getting them drunk or high for sex. Recording sexual acts without permission. Hurting someone because of their sexual orientation. Ripping a family member, a child, a date, a friend, a stranger. Purchasing a human being for sex. You make the choice every single time. Sexual violence is many things. Make a choice. Do not do it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we're here with JoJo Brooks Shiflett, who is a lawyer and is working pro bono with the Free Leonard Peltier Group. And before we get any further, and I want to bring this up a couple more times before we end the segment, JoJo, can you tell us how and where and what people should do, what the action is of our listeners to Free Leonard Peltier?
Yes. I would say the easiest things for you to do, but they add up. They mean something.
Mm-hmm.
You can call the White House. It's easy. 202-456-1111. Let's say it again. 202-456-1111. What do you do when you call? All you have to do is say, I support clemency for Leonard Peltier, because what President Biden needs in order for him to sign a clemency order, he needs your support. He needs the public. He needs to know that if he does this, the public is not going to be upset with him. Because I'll tell you what makes Leonard's case so different, so fragile, so difficult. FBI agents were involved. He didn't. If he had shot, and he didn't shoot anybody,
mm-hmm.
but if the death had occurred, if these men had been anything other than federal agents, Leonard would have already been out. But Clinton and Obama promised.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't write a political promise, but they were made. A Native American community supported both candidates. They pretty much guaranteed us they would not forget Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't. Clinton came real close. But then 500 FBI agents showed up in front of the White House and demonstrated.
Mm-hmm.
And it did not get signed. And I just think it's unfair, because let's get back. What did the FBI do to him? They manufactured extradition affidavit.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing. My first 2 weeks of reading about this case, he should have never even been brought back here to be tried because they falsified the affidavit.
Right.
You know, that's what started his judicial nightmare, were these three affidavits. And the FBI even admits they falsified them.
Right.
You know, that's what gets me. So when they demonstrate, let's remember one thing. If you've been listening to the whole program, three segments back, I mentioned the associate director of the FBI at the time, who put AIM under the auspices of COINTELPRO,
mm-hmm.
a man by the name of W. Mark Felt.
Right.
You know, I just, the name I wanted to know as an attorney, I thought, you know, JoJo, I was reading the memos. I thought, I want to know who wrote this. I just want to know what he looks like.
Right.
I looked it up and I was floored.
Right.
You know who W. Mark Felt is, Robert?
I do.
You and I talk about this.
Right.
Yeah.
I do, but I want you to say it because it blows my mind.
Okay, the man who ordered AIM, American Indian Movement, and Leonard Peltier, all these men, to be harassed and targeted by the FBI, was none other than Deep Throat. Deep Throat from the Watergate scandal.
Mm-hmm.
He was the source for Woodward, Bern, what is it?
Bernstein.
Woodward, Bernstein, yeah. But Carl Woodward, and I can't remember the other one, the Bernstein, or was it Carl Bernstein? But anyway, mm-hmm. Woodward and Bernstein.
Right.
All the President's Men, the famous movie. It was all true for the younger generation listening. The Nixon scandal, Watergate. He was a retired FBI agent. Mark Felt. Now, what happened with Mark Felt? Well, when he retired, he and a guy, I think the name was Ed Mills, they were the only two FBI agents to ever be tried and convicted of COINTEL crimes. And they were looking at 7 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they were convicted of things like they had found out that they had wired, I don't know, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, Mr. and Mrs. Williams' house, had sent letters blackmailing people. When I say blackmailing, I should say bullying.
Yep.
We will show these pictures. You know, they would get them. A young lady to tempt a married man, take the pictures, and then force him to pretty much be silent.
Right.
If he was someone they considered a dissident. Okay, let's move along because I know we have only a short time.
Right, we got 2 minutes.
So, okay, so basically, Mark Felt. He was looking at 7 to 10 years. He'd already been prosecuted. It was on appeal. Guess what Omar felt? What happens with him? President Reagan pardons him. he was pardoned.
Right.
So my thing is, my point is, I have a problem. I think it's ironic. I think it's wrong that retired FBI agents lead a rally call against Leonard Peltier after 46 years. They know they did unsavory things. They know that COINTELPRO was illegal. And they know that's how he was prosecuted. Observers from the UN, the Human Rights Commission, they were there. They all said he was wrongly convicted. They all said it was an unfair trial.
Mm-hmm.
They did not produce ballistic evidence when requested by the defense. Okay? That mm-hmm. was a big no-no.
Right.
You don't do that. Let me tell you what that proved. They didn't even put the gun. They never even put a gun in Leonard's hand. They alleged that some gun they found in a roadway AIM car, because there was AIMsters in there.
Right.
They said that AR-15 had to have been Leonard's. He had to have shot it.
Right.
But the bullet that they got from the crime scene did not even match the alleged gun that they allegedly put in his hand. They didn't match. Okay, so he's in there
mm-hmm.
with really absolutely no evidence. He's in there for one thing, because he was at the shootout.
Hmm.
He was there.
Mm-hmm.
Did he shoot? I don't know. I think he might have said in an interview he did. But you know what? That's what happens at a shootout. There was crossfire, but they convicted him on evidence of Myrtle Corbear.
Right.
That you saw him, or they extradited him on this evidence, that she saw him, eyewitness, shoot them like at point blank range. We know all it was false. Mm-hmm. So now where are we at? We've got in the United States political prisoner who, when Gorbachev met Reagan, you know, the first thing Reagan taunted him a little bit, said, when are you going to let your political prisoners go? This was when the first minute they met.
Wow.
You know what Gorbachev said back to him?
What?
As soon as you let Leonard Peltier go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Leonard Peltier gets more press, more support in Europe and communist countries than he does here in America in the land of the free. The press blacks us out. They black right. Leonard. It's just a lot of it, like I say, it's because we have two young, naive, I think well-intended, young FBI agents who lost their lives. And that was tragic.
Right.
But we also had a young Indian who lost his life. And he wasn't even investigated. And that's not right. It's not. And it's not right that Leonard is the scapegoat under an illegal program that wouldn't be tolerated today. Oh, and one of the jurors, Robert, mm-hmm. before I forget.
Right.
A jury of our peers, a lady, admitted she was reported by her co-workers. She was prejudiced or biased against Native Americans, Indians. The judge called her for a conference and asked her, is this true? Have you said these things? You know what she said? She said, yes, I am. She says, but I can put aside my biases and prejudices for this trial. And she voted to convict him.
You've been listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we've been with JoJo Brooks Shiflett. We'll see you tomorrow, live tomorrow.